Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
The American Red Cross says the nation is facing its worst blood shortage in more than a decade. The organization said this week that the national blood crisis is threatening patient care and forcing doctors to make very tough choices about who is able to receive blood transfusions. Talking about this morning is John Godin. He's a Red Cross spokesperson with the American Red Cross Connecticut chapter. Good morning, John. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, good morning, Melissa, and thank you for having us again.
So, John, this is not a new topic. In fact, I think I've talked to Jocelyn a few times about seeing these incredibly low numbers that we've seen in a few years and in over a decade. What is the difference now? Like, what do you mean by a blood crisis? Because I thought we were already in a blood crisis once the pandemic started.
Yeah, typically we as a Red Cross organization try to maintain a 5-day supply of all blood types so that we can distribute them to the hospitals as needed. What we've seen in recent weeks is in some cases we have less than a 1-day supply of critical blood product.
Oh my God.
Across our, you always want to encourage people to give blood. Right now, we especially those who have O blood, particularly O negative, which is a universal blood type. But when you start getting to a 0.5-day or 1-day supply, you get concerned, right? And I think what's happened is we've had a 10% decline of people donating blood since the pandemic started, and you've seen many different waves over the last almost 2 years now. We've been going through the crisis, and now what we're starting to see is we're actually facing some staffing limitations for, you know, employees that are out sick. So that it's endemic of what's happening with a lot of other parts of the economy. So we're just as much affected as everyone. The other thing I want people to realize is blood is a perishable product. In some cases, blood can only be stored for 5 days. So it always has to be replenished. So, you know, that's kind of the nature of what's going on today. And hopefully by putting a message out like this, what we're doing is promoting or encouraging people who are healthy, who want to give blood, encourage them to come to some of our blood drives over the coming weeks.
John, give us an idea. If someone shows up to give blood today, let's just say, how many people are they helping? How much supply is that giving you?
Well, typically, it depends on what kind of a donation you do, but each donation can help up to 3 people, okay? So I like to tell people that when they give blood, they give the blood the gift of life, right? And you could be helping 3 people with that gift. And the reality is when one gives blood, it really is only about a 1-hour process from start to finish. In fact, if you do a pre-screening questionnaire before you go to the blood center, you could probably be in and out in 45 minutes. But the actual giving of the blood itself is 10 minutes. Okay?
Right. It takes no time. Yeah.
It takes very little time.
How often can you go to give blood? Like if I gave blood today, when's the next time I could go?
Well, regular red blood donations, 56 days. So every 56 days, you can cycle through and give blood on a regular basis. And we have donors who are so committed that, you know, I've seen situations where someone who is a blood donor ambassador at some of our drives have said, this is my 141st blood donation.
Wow, that's
so
beautiful.
Do the math. Someone's done it for almost 12 years straight. Mm-hmm. Or over a period of maybe 15 years, donated 141 blood units.
That's a lot.
It's impressive. And we appreciate those blood donors. And what we're doing is those who are regular blood donors, we constantly keep in contact with them, whether it's through text, email alerts, even phone calls, to make sure they're still able to give blood, make sure they're healthy to give blood, and make sure they schedule their next appointments.
We're talking to John Godin this morning. He is the Red Cross spokesperson for the American Red Cross in Connecticut here. And as you've probably seen in the headlines, the Red Cross is facing a national blood crisis. It's being called the worst blood shortage in over a decade. John saying that in some cases we have less than a 1-day supply. So what does that mean, John? How are doctors able to pick who gets the blood transfusion? Like, are we going to see, and I don't want to be doom and gloom, but are we talking about potentially seeing people getting sicker or even perishing because we just don't have enough blood donations?
Well, I can't speak for the individual physicians or the individual healthcare facilities, but what could happen is maybe elective surgeries may be postponed because of a blood product not being available. I think that's some of the things that you might see and some of the things that we've seen in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you want to make sure, so I'll give you, I always give this personal story. My dad needed a blood transfusion 18 months ago. He needed it to get his blood volume up to a certain level. What if that blood was not available to him? I believe he's an O negative blood type. What if that blood was not available for my dad when he went to the hospital? That's the type of story I like to relay to people. The other thing I want folks to understand, every second, there are two people in this country that need blood donations. But only 3% of the population in America gives blood. So do that math. I mean, if you could get another 10% of the population to give blood, if they're healthy and eligible, that would go a long way towards satisfying the blood needs. And the Red Cross, you know, collects almost 40% of the blood product in the U.S.
Could you give us an idea, John Godin, of the American Red Cross Connecticut chapter? You know, where does their blood go? Does it stay here in Connecticut, or does it get shipped across the country and all over?
It'll get shipped to wherever the need is. I don't know specifically where certain blood donations go. Whether I'd say the majority probably stay within the state, but there are certain circumstances where we will go cross lines if a local blood supplier doesn't have that particular blood. We'll send it across state lines to facilitate that need.
But there is a need, obviously, here in Connecticut. It's not like we're crushing it. Everybody seems to be struggling, correct?
Everyone has a need for blood at this time. That's correct.
We're checking back in with John Godin, who's with the American Red Cross. He's one of the spokespeople for the Connecticut chapter. So, John, here's my question. I know you guys have seen a huge decrease in people donating blood. We know the pandemic is a huge reason, and it goes from donation events, unfortunately, having to be canceled because of COVID, or people not able to travel, whatever the case may be. Here's my question, because I think there's a very common misconception with COVID and donating. Omicron is spreading rapidly. You know this. And we're seeing, for example, in Connecticut, we're seeing more than a quarter of our population at this point, because we can't account for the people who are not testing. At least a quarter of our population has tested positive for COVID in recent days. So I'm wondering, if you get COVID, people then probably assume, well, then I can't donate blood. I'm going to make people sick. So can you speak to that? What is the truth behind getting COVID? And then when can you actually donate blood after you contract COVID?
So if you contract COVID, whatever the variant is that you unfortunately contract, once you're asymptomatic, you can give blood 14 days after your symptoms end.
Okay.
You can give blood.
Wow. Okay. So okay. 2 weeks after you have any positive test, even
correct,
if you're asymptomatic.
Correct.
Wow.
14 days.
Yep. Okay.
The other misconception that sometimes comes out is, if I had the COVID vaccine, does that preclude me from giving blood? The answer is no. If you have a known vaccine that is obviously authorized in the U.S., so Moderna, Pfizer, and Johnson & Johnson, yes, you can give blood. The guidance that I give to people is, if you are sick and you have not tested, or you've tested positive, do not go to a blood donor drive. We will ask people as a pre-screen if they've had COVID symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So back to your original question, if you've had COVID and you are in recovery and you become asymptomatic, you can give blood 2 weeks later.
Okay.
And part of it is, we want to make sure that, you know, also the blood donation centers are safe for everyone that gives blood. And we have enhanced protocols for cleaning. We require a mask of everyone that comes into a blood donor drive, vaccinated or unvaccinated. And our employees are required to be vaccinated as well. So, you know, a lot of it is there is no restriction except that you're asymptomatic and you've had 2 weeks since that started.
Okay. John Godin is here of the Red Cross. John, I always ask this question no matter who comes on from the Red Cross because I think it's always good to update this, and it's a good point. We have listeners who are part of the LGBTQ community. I know that the Red Cross supports changes to the MSM policy, which does, you know, basically requires a questionnaire asking about your sexual orientation and whether or not you can give blood. Any idea if the FDA is willing to move on that? I know they made a big change in April of 2020 and they went from 12 months to 3 months, I believe, or something along those lines. Are they willing to move a step further because we're at such a crisis level, do you know?
You know, I can't speak for the FDA, but the Red Cross does recognize the hurt the policy has caused for many in the LGBT community, and it believes blood donation eligibility should not be determined by methods that are based upon sexual orientation. But at the end of the day, the Red Cross is committed to working with partners towards achieving the goal of having the ability to give blood. I can't really comment on what the FDA's perspective is. We can give you kind of a broader statement regarding this, Melissa. And I know it's a tough discussion point.
It is. I mean, so I just want to clarify, the MSM policy, does it basically prohibit like a gay man from donating blood, or what? I don't understand the 12-month, 3-month thing. What did the change from April 2020? Do you have anything on that? Like, what was the change? What does that mean?
Yeah, I don't have it. At the end of the day, in April of 2020, the FDA reduced the deferral time for men who have sex with men from 12 to 3 months. The Red Cross is encouraged by the action, which we view as kind of an interim step towards achieving a greater goal. But right now, it really is up to the FDA. We can give you a broader statement, Melissa, if you'd like. We can give it to you.
No problem at all, John. No, I appreciate it. Like I said, I just know we're at a crisis level, and I just wanted to address and see. I know that this isn't coming from the Red Cross. I've made that very clear to our listeners, but I just didn't know if there was an update because I know you guys work very closely, obviously, with your partner. So I just wasn't sure if anything was coming down the pipeline since since notifying that the nation was at a crisis level. Before I let you go, John, I know January is National Blood Donor Month, and it sounds like you guys are going to be doing a something for one lucky winner for anyone who donates during the month of January. Do you have a minute to just tell us about that?
Yeah, we're partnering with the NFL. So if you give blood between January 1st and the end of January, so January 31st, you will be entered into a drawing for a trip to the Super Bowl. And that includes flights, hotel rooms, 2 tickets, and believe it or not, a tailgate party as well. The other thing that we're offering is you'll also be put in a drawing for a home entertainment system installed in your home. So it's stuff that we're doing to kind of incentivize people to give the gift of blood and encourage them to come out. It's still safe to give if you are eligible to give and you feel healthy to give.
And again, if you want to make an appointment to donate blood or volunteer with the Red Cross, be sure to head to redcrossblood.org. They also do have a Red Cross blood donor app that you could download, or you can call 1-800-RED-CROSS. John Godin, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for taking the time this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us, Melissa. We appreciate your partnership. Thank you.
It's time to get out and explore.
Melissa in the Morning brings you science you may not know on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
Alexa, take me to the moon. David Mestre, I am very excited to hear what today's topic is. Good morning. What's going on?
Good morning. Yeah, no, this is pretty exciting. So what happens is that, you know, in today's world, you know, we're living with video teleconferencing. That's become, you know, just incredibly commonplace.
That's our life. Yeah.
That's our life. Literally our life. But you know what? It turns out that this kind of tool may actually have some pretty important applications in space travel. You know, we're working with astronauts in space or on the moon or even on Mars. And so, you know, we need to probably develop some of this video teleconferencing capabilities. So we're going to test this out in the next mission to the moon, which is happening this year. And it's going to be known as the Artemis mission, Artemis 1. And it's going to test the space launch system. It's going to launch the Orion spacecraft into space. And the Orion spacecraft is going to take a journey to the moon, orbit around the moon, and then return to Earth. And this is going to be an unmanned mission. But on board, there's actually going to be this system that is a partnership between Cisco and Amazon. And Cisco is actually developing this WebEx teleconferencing tablet that's actually going to be on board the Orion capsule. And so we're actually going to do some teleconferencing with the spacecraft. Now teleconferencing here on Earth is very different than teleconferencing in space. And so there's a lot of technical problems have to worry about. You know, one of them is bandwidth. You know, this is going to be an HD teleconference in space. And so we have to squeeze 10 lanes of highway traffic into a bike lane. That's how we have to, like, you know, somehow compress all of this data. And WebEx is going to do this,
wow.
The special version of WebEx. And on top of that, you know, one of the big issues is that, you know, in space, we may lose a signal. And, you know, so if you're on a teleconference, you know, who hasn't had this experience where, you know, I froze.
Right. What's it called? The spinning wheel, the rainbow spinning wheel of death on the Mac.
Exactly, yeah.
We all know that. Oh, sure.
That's going to get worse in space. So we have to come up with a way to be able to retrieve that data, to actually, you know, store that data so that we can actually still, you know, not lose it. Because even a couple of milliseconds of signal loss could actually result in some of this the entire teleconference loss, too. And then on top of that, one of the big issues is that, you know, there's going to be a time delay. So in terms of, like, a teleconference, it's not going to be like a conversation that we're having. You may have to wait 20 seconds before I can actually give you an answer. So that's one of the things that can happen. But if we've got this teleconference that, you know, is this tablet that's on Orion, well, and the mission's unmanned, who are we talking to?
I don't know. Who are we talking to, David?
Okay. We're talking to Alexa.
You know, I have to be honest with you, David. I had this conversation with my brother-in-law the other day. Whoever decided to name Alexa, I just feel like they had maybe they knew. I'm curious if they had any idea that Alexa was going to be like the most common household name now, just because we're always talking to her in some capacity.
Yes.
I don't know. Now,
Amazon actually had to make a special version of Alexa for this mission because, you know, there will be intermittent internet access. And so it has to be a lot smarter. And what's amazing is that the Alexa on board the spacecraft can actually control devices.
That's kind of scary.
Board. Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that.
so just to, you know, just to get, can make it kind of cool. It turns out that when the mission is happening, and we're hoping for a summer of 2022, you know, we're keeping our fingers crossed that while Alexa is actually on the journey to space, you can go to your own Alexa device here on Earth. And
that
is
awesome.
You can ask Alexa, take me to the moon.
Like, tap into that broadcast. That's
into
really cool.
The astronaut Alexa on her way to the moon. Yeah. So this is going to be, this will be pretty wild. So we can just imagine what those conversations must be like as you know, people in Mission Control are literally talking to Alexa on board.
Cool. Yeah, to me, that's so behind the scenes, almost like when you get to hear oh, Christian, I'm totally blanking on the name of it, but when you can hear firefighters or police, scanners
on the radio.
The scanners, it's kind of that same idea where you're listening to this, you can't chime in, but you can hear the action kind of unfolding. That's very cool. That's neat.
Yeah, yeah. And this was literally all inspired, which is wild to say. This was actually inspired by Star Trek, the idea that you could actually have an onboard computer that you can talk to. With artificial intelligence, and so this is sort of what's happening. It's like science fiction is totally inspiring sort of our work processes and exploration of space, and so this is something that, you know, imagine in some sort of future that, you know, maybe Siri will be your computer on board the spacecraft or Alexa.
Here's my only thing, David, and call me doom and gloom, but I'm just being realistic. Because we're seeing it happening across the country where robots are taking people's regular jobs, do you think we will ever near a time where astronauts are not needed anymore?
Well, you know, it's actually already here. So not that they're not needed, but it turns out that they're needed for different types of applications, and robots are better for other types of exploration. So like, for example, right now, you know, we've got two robotic rovers that are exploring the surface of Mars. And they're doing science, and they're taking pictures, and even they've got microphones that are giving us the sounds of the surface of Mars. And so there are some times when it's appropriate to use robotic systems and robotic missions for exploration. And then there are other times when, you know, maybe a human would work. So like, for example, you know, the type of science that these robots did on Mars, you just put one geologist there with a hammer and a magnifying glass.
Wow.
And
yeah.
And the amount of science that one scientist can do is astronomical compared to the robot. It just there's no comparison.
Okay, good. That's good, because, you know, at this point, not that he's going to do it, but my 3.5-year-old is hoping to be a rocket man. So I want to know if in 20 years, if a robot's going to take my kid's job.
Yeah,
that's what I want to know.
No, but what may happen is that, you know, your son may actually have a colleague, and that colleague turns out that it's actually a robot, and then they're working together. And they may actually have a pretty good working relationship, you know, conversations about,
simple, not emotional.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Honestly,
that's
a dream.
Did you see the last game, you know?
Right, exactly. Did you see it? Good job, Georgia. You did great. You won over Alabama. And Jesus,
yes, exactly.
Like, oh, okay, this is great. Oh, my goodness. David Mestre, this is very cool. And I definitely want to see if this is going to happen in the summer as they're projecting, and if we could listen to it on our Alexas. That would be very, very neat.
Absolutely. So just remember, when the time comes, just ask Alexa, take me to the moon.
Take me to the moon. I love it. David Mestre, thank you so much for coming on this morning.
You're welcome.
I'm telling you, David Mestre always takes us to a totally wild place. David, take us to a wild place.
It's time to get up and get moving. Workout Wednesday. Melissa in the morning on WICC 600.
Well, it's no secret. It is freezing outside January in New England. What do we expect? But instead of going and grabbing the chowder every time you want to warm up and have a little snack, maybe there's a better alternative. Good morning to our wellness coach, Amy Linus, this morning. How are you, Ames?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm good. You know, I find in the wintertime, we can hide a lot with our really baggy jackets and everything going on. And then the spring comes and we're like, what happened?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you are not kidding.
Right?
Especially up here where it's really cold.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
What would you recommend for wintertime snacks?
Okay, so I wanted to offer your listeners a little recipe as well. So all they have to do is reach out to me at amy@fitbodyvibe.com for this. I'll email in this recipe. My turkey chili has the perfect macro breakdowns, and it's great for snacking on, and you can cook it in the crock pot. Makes a lot. You can even freeze it. So that's something to grab and go that's nice and warm, and it has, like I said, the perfect amount of protein, carbs, and fat grams, and the perfect caloric breakdown, too. And it tastes good. That's the kicker.
Okay.
It actually does taste very good.
So I was just going to say to everybody, when Amy first partnered up with WICC, I had gone to her and I said, listen, my working out, that's fine, but my nutrition, it could use some work. One of the first recipes Amy sent me was this chili recipe. And this was in, what, October, September? It wasn't
really cold
yet. But Amy's like, listen, if you're a foodie, you should really try this. And I'm like, I'm a beef chili kind of girl. girl. I'm going to be real with you guys. I'm a beef chili kind of girl. I can tell when you're eating turkey chili, and I taste it, and I'm like, oh, you are making me eat something healthy when I don't want to. I'm going to be honest with you, Amy. Even my husband said, when we made your turkey, and now we've never gone back, we only make your turkey chili. It is so hearty, and it's so tasty, and it's so unbelievable. It is actually a staple in our house. We probably make your turkey chili every 2 weeks, and we have since October.
I'm so glad to hear that. Good. Very good.
So there you go. Client testimony.
I wanted to tell you also, if you like beef, because I like that in mine too, you can get the 93% lean ground beef and use that as well. It's about the same amount of calories, so give or take. And
you can. Yeah, I didn't need it. I honestly did not need it. I really didn't. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm a beef chili kind of girl. I'm always going to go for the beef every time over turkey, even though it's bad.
I love you because I'm the same.
There you go. Exactly. That's why we're soul sisters. But I'm telling you, I have never needed even an ounce of beef in that chili. The turkey chili is phenomenal. That recipe is good.
Good. Yeah. Well, I'd love to share it with your listeners too. So like I said, they can reach out to me. My email address is amy@fitbodyvibe.com, and I'm happy to share that if anybody wants it.
Okay, awesome. We're talking to Amy Linus. She is our wellness coach. Now, Amy, what about just everyday snacking if you're in the car? Obviously, the chili is a go-to for a lot of people in the winter months. Soups are a go-to.
Oh, yeah.
But what about like when you're on the go? What do you recommend?
Okay, so when you're on the go, I have a lot of my little clients who like their potato chips and that crunch, you know, I want that crunch. Well, one thing I had them try, and they kind of fought me at first, but everybody seems to like it. You know, the mini sweet peppers, the little sweet peppers, you can cut those in half, get yourself a little bit of reduced fat or fat-free cream cheese, mix that up and sprinkle it with some everything bagel seasoning. And it's raw veggies, so it's good for your digestion, and the taste and flavor is there, and you get that crunch. And you can have those in the car. You just have to make them ahead of time, but they keep pretty well in the refrigerator.
So wait, is that like it's you just pick up the peppers individually with the cream cheese on it? Okay. That sounds amazing.
Yep.
That sounds so good.
Oh, my gosh. They're so good. But if you know, like I said, if you're in the car, you can cut them in half, and then you can go ahead and spread the cream cheese and seasoning on top of them. That way it's easier to maneuver, but they're very, very good.
We're talking to Amy this morning, trying to keep you healthy during these winter months, but also satisfy your taste buds. Amy, tell me about this, because I've been doing research on, and you just mentioned it a few minutes ago, caloric dense foods. And I used this example before, and I know somebody wanted me to kind of dive into this. If someone gave you a cup of grapes and a cup of raisins, which one do you go for? You go for the grapes, and people say, but why? All raisins are our dried grapes. And it's because they've got the water in it that actually fills you up more. And could you talk a little bit about caloric dense foods and why to maybe go that route as well?
Exactly. So the caloric dense foods, like your foods that have higher fiber contents in them, they're going to keep you fuller longer, and they're going to take a little longer for your body to digest and break down, which is what we want. We don't want to be constantly eating. You want to have like 2 hours between meals so that your body can burn through what you've already taken in. So when you're taking in those caloric dense foods, then your body takes a little bit longer to break them down, and you're fuller for a longer period of time. So we're kind of getting our bang for our buck there, and you're not like starving 20 minutes after eating something that your body digests quickly, like a simple sugar.
Mm-hmm. So our caloric dense foods, are those a lot of times fruits and vegetables?
Mostly, yes. They are fruits and vegetables. Fruits have a tendency to have a higher glycemic index, so your body will absorb those a little quicker. But your vegetables they're more fiber-rich and fiber-dense, so they take a little bit longer to break down. So it's nice to kind of mix and intermingle the two so that your body doesn't burn through everything so quickly.
Yeah,
I'm always going to tell you to have protein with that too.
Right. Oh, of course. Absolutely. No, protein is super important. And I was going to say, even with your vegetables, you know, something as simple as steaming your vegetables versus baking them makes them more calorically dense. I'm learning all of this, and I think it's so interesting. It's amazing.
Yeah, they're more nutrient packed for sure.
That's so amazing. Yeah. Amy, if people want to contact you or they want to learn more about Fit Body Vibe, where do they go?
So we are on the web at fitbodyvibe.com. We're also on Instagram under Fit Body Vibe, as well as Facebook under Fit Body Vibe. So please, like, connect with us online and on YouTube as well. I forgot about that. So please subscribe to our videos on YouTube under Fit Body Vibe. There are a lot of instructional videos and things and fitness tips that can help you guys out that are complimentary. So log on, take a look around, and let us know other things you guys would like to see and hear about.
Amy, I tell you, my Georgia peach, we so appreciate having you on each and every single day, or every single week, I should say. Thank you so much for your time.
I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much, Melissa, and I'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Sounds good. I'll see you here.